championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel, which you can find on any podcasting platform out there. Y'all, it's been, a month now, I think? Maybe somewhere around there. But we're back. We're here. We're coming back at you every single week again. Let's jump right into it. Today we're going to be talking about basically everything we've missed over the past 3 to 4 weeks. The draft, Brew McCoy, the guys retiring from the NFL, the recruiting weekend that happened, May 4th, I believe was the day. Anyways, then go into some of the questions that y'all have shot us over Twitter and some questions we came up ourselves for what's going to happen next year in football and what the heck is happening with the Texas baseball team. Joe is going to, for the last time, hopefully, tell y'all, but definitely not the last time, tell y'all what's going on with the baseball team. So let's hop right into it, Joe. I have been away. I will be completely honest with everybody. I'm still catching up with Texas news and just everything that has happened since I was out of the country doing some work in India. I didn't really get a chance to really rest or even go many places, but it was still fun. It's always a trip. It's always interesting.
I'm sure. I mean, I think you sent me a couple videos, or I saw a couple videos, and you know, there's a lot more. You think Texas has traffic, bad traffic? Just wait till you add a non-human element to it.
Oh man, dude, chaos reigns in the streets of India, but when it rains, chaos really reigns. Get it?
Nice.
But it's just like guys were trying to go the wrong way on the street, like big trucks, and they're trying to fit in between two lanes of traffic going the opposite way. They're trying to fight upstream. It was just some of the stuff that happens there is insane. But let's go ahead and get right into what we missed while I was dealing with that. Joe, I missed the draft while I was in India, and I was expecting more fireworks to happen earlier in the draft for the Longhorns, specifically for this guy, little Jordan Humphrey.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting this to happen, and then when it didn't happen, I knew exactly why, and I took some heat for it. He left too early.
Well, I think that's a good argument to make. I think, and I realize this every year, you know, we who watch this, no matter what we do, this is the team that we watch the most. It's the team we're most familiar with. And we're always going to think a little bit higher of the players and maybe everybody else and think, oh, no, he's not a sixth rounder. He's definitely getting picked in the fourth. I think a lot of people had this sense that there was a good chance 4 Longhorns would get picked, and it'd be Boyd, Omenihu, Humphrey, and Gary Johnson. And then it only ended up being 2. As far as Humphrey, you could say that he left too early, but I think one of the reasons he thought to leave early and thought it was a good idea was, A, he's not going to get any faster, which was a problem, especially at, you know, the weight he ran and how fast he ran at 4.8. And B, if all he does is have a better season, that's not going to bump his draft stock up a ton. So I understand going, but obviously some of the decisions he made after that weren't very good. I mean, you run I'm maybe getting the order mixed up. Run at a lighter weight. Oh, no, he ran at a weight at the combine, got that 4.8. Apparently, I believe he slimmed down for pro day and didn't run any faster. Then the most inexplicable thing for me is that he's a wide receiver. Although they may want to put him at some sort of tight end position, he's not going to be putting his hand in the dirt. He's not going to be blocking, defensive ends. He's not going to be a true tight end. He'll be, one of these hybrid players the NFL is starting to use in a matchup problem.
Right. He's going to be one of those hybrid players. And while he didn't get drafted, he went to probably the best team he could have with the New Orleans Saints. And Sean Payton knows how to use hybrid players. I mean, you look no further than Taysom Hill. He took Taysom Hill and did with him what probably the Patriots should have done with Tim Tebow. they taken a guy who can be in so many positions, like little Jordan Humphrey, and they're going to, he went to the right team. But still, he's a wide receiver and not a tight end.
So why don't you catch passes? You're a receiver. Yeah. Why didn't you run routes for all the scouts and the GM and the player and the team representatives that were there to see you catch the ball? Like, I know you may have had more than 1,000 yards this season, but they don't want to see you just rest on that, especially when that was your first breakout year at that position. So, some players are always going to choose to leave early. It's just kind of the nature of the business. You know, the NFL aspirations when they're right there for some people are too good to pass up or to delay for a year, and I understand that. But just not maximizing the decision by not catching passes, what they're paying you to do, what they're prospectively paying you to do, you're not catching passes. It didn't make any sense to me.
Here's why I think the leaving early is probably even more of a dagger for him. And I'm not the only one who thinks this in this terms. The combine and the pro days are kind of not throwaway, but they're not as important as the tape. It's what little Jordan Humphrey had on tape was good. It was good, but it was 1 year of good, only one. And you can ask anybody who's had just one good year of tape. Sometimes it's not enough unless you are absolutely killing it. He had a breakout season, as you said, and that is not enough to go out and get drafted at the position where you probably should. It is a breakout season. It is your sunlight finally showing on you, just a glimpse. And if you stay for another year, you're likely to break out even more. The same thing could have been said for Malik Jefferson and Deshaun Elliott. They had breakout seasons. They could have gone higher, but they left early. They got drafted, but they left money on the table. Same thing with little Jordan Humphrey. I mean, if you want to leave early and get in the first, second, and third round and get the guaranteed money, then you better be the best wide receiver at least in the Big 12 or even on your team, because there's an argument to be made that Colin Johnson might have been the best wide receiver on the team. So if you're not even the best wide receiver on your own team, it's your breakout year, then maybe you should think about coming back. And people want to say that, you know, you can't really fault the kid for wanting to take the money, because even the practice squad, you're getting $350,000 a year. That's great money, right? But if you want to, it's a nice nest egg, but you're not going to live your entire life on that. And the thing is, those contracts, not guaranteed. The contracts aren't guaranteed, I believe, after the third round. I could be
You get some guaranteed money in the first few rounds, but their teams, if I remember correctly, they're not spending guaranteed money on your sixth rounder.
Exactly. So
I think, or not enough to where I'm, you know, NFL draft expert here.
Exactly. But, so you might be getting some money, but you're not getting the money that you could.
Right.
And that's what he did. He left money on the table to chase trying to get money faster. If you take a look at a guy like Charles Omenihu, who left money on the table, instead of trying to get it faster, he went and got drafted, got more money than he could have, and it has a more secure position on his team. Little Jordan Humphrey chased the money, which, you know, you can't fault him for it. It's, you know, I don't know his background. I don't know his decisions, but he chased the money, and he made some bad decisions. He wasn't, I believe, shown to be good enough to be in the top 1, 2, 3, even fourth round. And I believe fourth round was where he was like, okay, that's where NFL draft experts were saying, yeah, that's where you're going to go. That's not good enough to leave early when you have his potential.
I disagree. I think if you get drafted, you probably made the right decision, because some team thought that you were, you know, worth them using one of their 7 draft picks on. So I think people who read me and read how I write about this subject, I'm like, you know what? It's their decision. Go get paid. You've been putting it off for a few years you've been putting it off for a few years, period. Go ahead and go get it. That type of thing.
Right.
But make sure you do it smartly, and that's not what happened in this case.
Yeah, but even then, I mean, you look back, what was it, in 2014? Or, no, 2017. You had Sony Michel and Nick Chubb at Georgia. They're running backs. And they were told, hey, you guys can go, I believe it was in the third round. Everybody expected them to leave because that's the quote-unquote smart thing to do. No, they stayed for another year, got first-round draft picks for themselves, and got guaranteed money. That, you know, people said you can't do much better than that, especially when you're competing with somebody at the exact same position. Mm-hmm. And I know it's one case, but that is an example of what can happen.
Right.
And that's an example of what, it's not just what can, it's what has happened. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a lot more likely to get drafted as a senior than you are a junior. I mean, I think Max Olson has written an article on this for The Athletic. I think it was last year he did it, and he referenced that article again saying, yeah, no, this is the same thing, same argument. It's not happening for a lot of these juniors that are going in early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the league tells them go back to school, but everybody else tells them, you know, you can go here, you can go here, you can go here, and they're more inclined to believe the positive. So
right, right. So next guy on this list, I mean, the next two guys are guys who listened and went back to school, and Charles Omenihu and Chris Boyd. Omenihu going to the Houston Texans in the fifth round, and Boyd going to the Minnesota Vikings in the seventh. Both of them, I think, probably made the right decision going back. I don't think they were drafted if they go into the draft last year, and now they're on teams.
Oh yeah, Chris Boyd not getting picked to the seventh round just proves, yeah, you're exactly right. They would not have gotten selected at all if they had gone out last year. Omenihu, I was a little surprised the Texans picked him up, just because, you know, we've often talked about how he's a guy that really, if you put him in a 4-3 end situation, it's where he could really do well. Once you got him outside the tackle, he showed a lot of promise this year. But the Texans, and at least right now, Romeo Crennel, that's a 3-4 team. So he's going to be doing a lot of the same stuff that he was doing. He'll probably have to add a few more pounds, get above the 280 he's been at, and try to get a little bit more than that. And he's going to have a, you know, not only will he have Romeo Crennel, one of the defensive masterminds of this league, helping him out, but he'll have two really good pass rushers, at least for 1 year with one of them, in J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney helping out. And even D.J. Reader, another good guy on that defensive line. Like, Charles Omenihu is going to a great situation for a defensive lineman, right. and you know, gets to stay in state. Chris Boyd going in the seventh round to the Vikings. You know, if you remember, when would that have been? It would have been about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, where I remember tuning into a Spectrum News telecast with Chris Boyd and Spectrum News Austin telecast with Chris Boyd and Holton Hill announcing their decision in Austin. And it still wasn't a slam dunk, even though it was being taped in Austin, where
he's still going to flip to Aggies. One of these days. One of these days, he's going back. He's going to flip.
And now, you know, you go from that to being opposite corners to, you know, a one-year hiatus of not being teammates to now they're back together again. And, you know, the list
it's
of reasons
fate.
Has to, yeah.
It's the, destiny. It's got to happen.
The list of reasons why Holton Hill went undrafted are definitely known. But, you know, he was definitely a guy that should have been had talent to be drafted high, probably in the second day. And you know, just now they're back together again. From being that close in high school to being teammates in college to now being teammates in the pros.
Yeah. And speaking of Holton Hill and little Jordan Humphrey, you got to imagine, and it kind of goes back to the argument of these guys left too early. You got to imagine what would happen if Malik Jefferson comes back and DeShawn Elliott comes back. I believe DeShawn Elliott was in a better position than Brandon Jones was in this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe Brandon Jones made the right decision, made a better decision than DeShawn Elliott. Right. I believe DeShawn Elliott should have come back. I believe Malik Jefferson should have come back. I think the only two guys last year, maybe three guys last year who made the right decisions were Michael Dixon, Connor Williams, and Holton Hill. And Holton Hill, because if he comes back, he's probably not playing, or at least he's getting suspended again or something like that. Michael Dixon, you don't have anything more to prove. You are elite, elite. And Connor Williams, you were told you were getting a first-round grade pick, and just kind of fell through throughout the process. Malik Jefferson, Deshaun Elliott jumped too early, just like little Jordan Humphrey did.
Yeah, I get that, but like I said earlier, I think if you get picked and you declared early, you made the right call.
I guess. But let's go ahead and go to the next thing that we missed while we were gone. Brew McCoy has finally put in his waiver. I know I reported that he had put that in early because I was told he had put it in, or he was going to put it in early, and that it never happened until later. I don't think it's actually gone in yet, but Texas is just holding on to it, trying to, what I was told, sharpen language, make sure the lawyers are on the same page as the family. I mean, they have an absolutely stellar lawyer who just made his name through taking it to the NCAA. So
yeah, and that's kind of all that matters. I think once Shea Patterson lawyered up, people realized that if you wanted to play right away, you needed to lawyer up, and that's what Tate Martell did. That's what Justin Fields did. That's not what Luke Ford did, and that's why his waiver was denied to go from Georgia to Illinois. The offensive lineman, I think, who was at Coastal Carolina transferring to Virginia Tech, he didn't lawyer up. That's why his waiver, I really feel like, was denied. So I think lawyering up, obviously there's a lot of details, like you mentioned, that have to be taken care of. But I think you can just really look at it from the big picture and say, if you bring the gun to the knife fight, then the NCAA is going to back off.
Right. As soon as you bring the law against the NCAA, they're like, well, we don't want to jeopardize anything of any of this treasure trove that we have. Let's just go ahead and appease. It's appeasement's a funny game. Well, I'll just leave it there. I think it's going to change the NCAA. I know I said I didn't think it was going to, but now I kind of think it is, the more I listen and hear about it. But I agree. I think Brew McCoy bringing a lawyer into this is incredibly smart. It's left me very optimistic about the chances of him playing for Texas, playing on the field against Louisiana Tech come August 31st or September 1st. I don't remember which day it is. So Texas is in a good spot there. They're making sure to be extremely cautious with this. And like, I believe even overly cautious. You saw Justin Fields and Tathan Martell go through, kind of not even get a guy who really, as their lawyer too, who deals with the NCAA. Brew McCoy is going about it extremely cautiously. And the funny thing is he's doing this all on his, like not all on his own, but it's very much driven by Brew McCoy is what I hear. So there, that's what's going on behind the scenes of Brew McCoy, what's going on with his. They're going to send it to kind of how the waiver process goes. Their lawyers and Texas's department is going to send it to the NCAA. A council, I believe, four people from the NCAA are going to read over the waiver, make a decision, and then if that decision comes down, they say no, then Brew McCoy can appeal it and go to court. So that's probably why the NCAA is avoiding dealing with these lawyers. That's why I'm pretty optimistic with how this is going to end up.
Yeah, I'm the same way. NCAA is stupid. Needs to make some changes. Another show or four for another time.
How many years do you give the NCAA before it dissolves?
Whenever the TV contracts are up and the Power Five breaks off.
So
goes 10, off Premier League.
10 years?
I think it's 2025 is the big date.
Okay.
Either 2023 or 2025. I can't remember how close that horizon is, but
that's,
I think,
interesting. That's a lot closer to happening than I was expecting. I was expecting like 10, 15 years before the NCAA finally keels over and dies.
It was in 10 years about 4 years ago. So now it's in 6 years.
Okay.
That's math for you.
That is math. Then other things that happened were Jamaal Charles, Derek Johnson, and Brian Robeson all retiring from the NFL. I'm going to ask you, what were your favorite plays by each one of those guys?
Ooh, okay. Dang, that's real tough. I think, okay, Jamaal Charles, any collection of the Oklahoma State comeback runs. I remember watching that game at my one of my best friend's house growing up, and we were going crazy watching Jamaal Charles run just all over the field. Like that was one of the best games ever. I think Ian Boyd wrote about it last week, and it was phenomenal. Derek Johnson, whew. My favorite play of his might be the fumble punch.
I don't think there's
anything better than that. That's he was so good at it, and it was just so effective that it always worked. And I said this, like, I believe that Breckenhager, in the two occasions that he wore it, wore number 60 well, and I believe that a lot of the reason why he wore number 60 had to do a lot more with his father, maybe more so than how he played on the field. But again, he wore it well. He is 2-0 in it, which is very important. But with how historic the number 60 is, it should take Derek Johnson to bring that baby back out again. Mm-hmm. It should take somebody like him for you know.
Do you retire Tom Herman? You don't retire Derek Johnson's number, do you?
See, I don't think so.
He wasn't that. I mean, he was really good. He wasn't retired number good, was he?
But yeah, and he didn't. One thing that you can say is that, you know, what his greatest accomplishment, I believe, at least at Texas, obviously the individual accolades, but the team greatest team accomplishment, I think, was, I think, just the Michigan Rose Bowl, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
But even so, if you have to be at least as good as Derek Johnson to wear number 60 at Texas, because yeah, Nobody's better than Tommy Novus.
Yeah. I think my Jamaal Charles favorite play has to be him. What was it? It wasn't his freshman year, but it was very early on in his career when I specifically remember it because I was at that Oklahoma game, and he runs into basically a pile of Oklahoma defenders, and everybody in that stadium's like, okay, the play's over, right? It's going to end up being forward progress. It's just going to stop the play. And then all of a sudden, you see Jamaal Charles come out the other side of that entire pile and run, I think it was 80 yards for a touchdown against Oklahoma. That was probably my favorite play of Jamaal Charles, because you found out, okay, this kid's legit. He's super fast, and he's hard to take down. And it was just uphill from there. Oklahoma State, and then on from there, it was just crazy watching him perform. I think, I don't want to say he was under-respected, but I think he was incredible. I think he was better than most people give him credit for, which is saying something, because he was really, really good, and people gave him a lot of credit. So I think my favorite Derek Johnson moment, you said, is the punch against Oklahoma, and then to knock the ball out and force a fumble. My favorite Brian Robeson is...
There's only one. The fourth down, I can't remember if he made the tackle, but he crossed his opponent's face.
He made the first hit.
Lindale White's legs on that fourth down. And if I don't know if that was enough to do it all. Can't really remember. Haven't watched the replay. But that fourth down stop's not getting made.
And then guys like Michael Griffin?
That was Huff.
Huff comes in and makes the second tackle, and
yeah,
the rally
stops
comes.
Not being made without Robinson making that
exactly.
Wendell White's leg
made a great rip through move across the face, and then stopped Lindo White. Also, another of Pete Carroll's "What the hell are you thinking, coach?" moments, not having Reggie Bush on the field there. But that's another story. So we have three Texas greats leaving the NFL. There's not many, you know. I had a friend text me this. It's like, there's not many more guys. I mean, there's a lot of guys, but there's not many more like really great players for Texas in the NFL anymore. We have some guys in the NFL who can kick the hell out of the ball, but not many guys who are like, wow, you are a Texas great, like all-time great.
Yeah, that's true. There are not very many Texas all-time greats walking around, but I'd still call Big Malcolm Brown a pretty good player.
You have Vaccaro, you have Diggs in there. You have, who else? I guess Deontay Foreman you can say is a great.
Yeah, it's weird saying that, but I feel like a 2,000-yard season, and Doak Walker Award definitely puts him up there. It's just the team accomplishments didn't surround him.
Malcolm Brown, Jordan Hicks.
Definitely some good players. I don't know if we...
Marquise Goodwin?
I think he was really good. I don't know if he was a
Alex Okafor.
Not a great.
Not a great? Sam Acho?
Not a great.
Not a great? Okay. Earl Thomas?
Great.
Great. Let's see. Colt McCoy is
great.
Still kicking in the NFL right there.
Yeah.
Brian Arakpo.
He retired?
He retired too. Damn. I completely forgot he retired. Lima Swede, no longer the NFL.
Great.
Man. Great. He is a great dude. I love that guy.
firm take. Lima Swede, great.
Vince Young was nothing without Lima Swede. Nothing.
The greatest Lima Swede moment might have been... Actually, no. Never mind.
Ohio State. Wrong.
Well, no, of course. But I was about to reference something else, and I realized the reference was completely wrong.
Okay. But, yeah, there's not many more guys in the NFL are kicking around. There's some, but there's not a ton. Not a ton. So, the next thing we missed is the recruiting weekend. May 4th happened. I believe it was last weekend. We didn't get to preview it, but we can review it because the rain kind of ruined the centerpiece of the weekend. Jambalaya was the centerpiece of the entire weekend, and you got guys like Zach Evans, Damian George, who are two guys you really, really need in this class. You had guys like Prince Liam Mnyelen, who were supposed to come in, but it didn't happen because Jambalaya didn't happen. And you had guys like Vernon Broughton, Chad Lindberg, Chris Thompson on campus, guys who you really want in this class. They might not, some guys like Chris Thompson and Chad Lindberg might not be like, oh, wow, this is a huge loss that this didn't happen, because they still love the school. But having Vernon Broughton there and not having Jambalaya and a bunch of these other talents around him and having a lot of hype for the big weekend probably hurts.
Yeah, a little bit. As far as Evans and George goes, I mean, if you think about this Jambalaya and the whole thing was supposed to be an icing on the cake type deal.
Right.
You want people coming to Austin to visit the University of Texas football program and to see what it has to offer. And if you can show cool other things like a ludicrous concert or like, hey, things like Jambalaya come here, then you do that. But these are football visits, and Vernon Broughton...
Ludacris being the icing on the cake is pretty funny, but okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but Vernon Broughton on an official visit, I bet all these guys wanted to go to Jambalaya, but Vernon Broughton's on an official visit to learn about the University of Texas. Not only that, he's got connections with some Texas commits on the offensive line, which is kind of most of the class, and he was here to learn about the football program. And that's what he was able to do this past weekend.
I guess. Chadlin, sure.
I mean, you don't think so?
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, they're there to have, understand the Texas program, but they're also there to have fun and get to know the team.
Well, of course.
If it's raining cats, it was raining hard. It had 6 inches of rain in, not only an hour, but pretty dang fast.
They still got entertainment in. It may not have been Jambalaya at Circuit of the Americas, but there was entertainment. And yes, of course, it's not great that Damian George and Zach Evans didn't make it in, but you go on an official visit to learn about the football program, not to go to a concert. Vernon Broughton, Lindberg, Thompson, all those guys, the offensive linemen who already know about the program, but Broughton, Thompson, Lindberg, those guys all were there for football, for the stuff that they're going to be doing with 85% of their free time, or 85% of their time, or I don't know the percentage. I'm just throwing it out there. I wouldn't give the tag ruined to the weekend. Not only because they put themselves in great positions for all these guys, but got them on campus and got told them things that have Texas in strong places in all the recruitments of the people who made it to campus.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm being dramatic saying ruined. But I don't want to say it ruined the weekend, but it ruined the centerpiece of the weekend, which was Jambalaya.
Right.
That's what I meant by ruined.
Once all the visitors who I'm sure were on official visits in part because of that still made it in, it still turned into a successful visit weekend for Texas.
Right. And to insert some optimism, insert some sunshine here, Texas made strong moves with Vernon Broughton this weekend. Strong, strong moves. LSU, probably the biggest threat to Texas because of his mother being a LSU, at least she was a coach there.
Mm-hmm.
Vernon Broughton is kind of had his eye on the SEC, likes the SEC, but Texas kind of brought his attention back over to Texas and said, hey, remember why your Twitter profile picture is of you in a Texas jersey? Yeah, that's why you want to come here. And he's like, oh, actually that's a good point. Yeah, Texas made some significant movement in that recruitment, and it does look a lot better. It looks good. It looks good, and it looks better, a lot better than it did previously. Other guys, Chad Lindbergh. I mean, like I said, Chad Lindbergh and Chris Thompson, Texas is the leader by far in both those recruitments. Thompson, maybe less so than Chad, but still, if Chad Lindbergh went to Stanford and then came back from Stanford saying, no, Texas is still my leader here, then that's significant. So for the other guys who are on that trip, I'm not as concerned. I'm not concerned that Zach Evans and Damian George didn't show up, because that was, again, icing on the cake for the weekend. And Texas has another one coming up June 22nd. That's supposed to be big. Guys who, hearing early returns on guys like Savelle Smalls possibly showing up to something like that, thinking about it. So just names like that throwing out there, June 22nd should be a huge weekend for Texas. Let's go ahead, though, and get on to the next part of the show, which is the mailbag. We kind of threw the mailbag out there really, really late, so we didn't get tons of questions, but we also had we had the mailbag because we had questions we wanted to answer, and we had, that's not enough questions, so let's go ahead and throw it out to the general public, and we got enough. So let's go ahead and throw it in there. We'll start off with our question. Is this the year that DBU comes back? Is 2019 the year where Texas's DBU is reinstated? And I guess you have to define, Joe, what does DBU being back mean to you?
Thorpe Award finalist, top 10 in a significant category, and at least a first round pick next draft.
Okay, I would agree with a Thorpe finalist. I would agree with top 10, but I would say a second round pick would probably be good. And maybe even if you have like a 2 third round picks, that's good.
Yeah, definitely have some depth, but you got to have a first round pick for sure.
Right. And, I know that PJ Locke last year at the, 2 years ago, Deshaun Elliott was asked, hey, is DBU coming back? And he said, we don't use those three words here until we've proven ourselves. And last year, PJ Locke kind of had the same message at the beginning of the season. But at the end of the season, he said, DBU is back. And I don't believe last year DBU was back because the only defensive back that was drafted was Chris Boyd. And there were no Thorpe finalists. Now, you had guys who were close, like Caden Stearns. I want to say Chris Thompson for some reason. Caden Stearns, who was kind of close to being a Thorpe finalist, but he didn't have an entire year worthy of Thorpe finalist praise.
Yeah.
But you're getting close, and you're on the path to getting there. So is this the year that DBU comes back, or is it next year? Because I think that's the question.
It could be next year. See, I don't think it's come back. It is back this year because they could have a guy make a great statistical run or have a great team defense statistic, especially with all the passing going on the Big 12. I think there's a better chance of having a Thorpe finalist than Brandon Jones, who's the only senior going in the first round or second round.
Right.
And I think that's A, just because I don't think that Thorpe finalist is going to be Brandon Jones, and B, it's probably going to be one of the, sophomore defensive backs, Anthony Cook, Jalen Green, Caden Stearns, BJ Foster, you know, all those guys. I think it's more likely to be them than Brandon Jones. I think Brandon's still going to have a great year. He's still going to get drafted. I don't see him having a Thorpe-level year, and I don't see him getting higher than a second-round pick. So by the standards that I set at the beginning of this question, I don't think this is the year DBU. I guess if that's the way DBU comes back, it's not happening this year. So
I think you can still have a DBU without having a guy drafted super high in the draft if you have Thorpe finalists and are just absolutely insane.
Right. Usually those coincide, though, but we also saw last year it doesn't necessarily have to.
Right.
You could have a guy with a great statistical year be a Thorpe finalist and then go in round five.
Exactly. And I think you have incredibly talented defensive backs this year. You have Anthony Cook. You have Jalen Green, Kobe Boyce, BJ Foster, DeMarvian Overshown, Caden Stearns, Brandon Jones. They're all dynamic. They're all talented. Josh Thompson's also talented. But I still think they're a year off from being where they really can be. Specifically because Anthony Cook and Jalen Green, this is their first year stepping into it. But I'm very optimistic here because I believe that Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones might be one of the best tandems in the backfield that Texas has had in quite a while, honestly. I think, and it might even be surpassed the year after that with BJ Foster and Caden Stearns. And talking about NFL draftness, I think BJ Foster has probably more NFL qualities or, you know, what the NFL scouts are looking for these days than Caden Stearns might have. And that being versatility in the positions he's able to go out there and play, which is what the NFL is looking for these days. You see the guys who are drafted are guys who are versatile. You see the guys who are sticking around and going to the Pro Bowl are guys who are versatile instead of having a singular position. You know, that's kind of where the NFL is going these days is to, if you look at the Chargers, seven defensive backs out on the field sort of thing. Adrian Phillips is their Pro Bowler. Because he can play anywhere on the field. He was like that at Texas. BJ Foster is like that at Texas too. Last year he was the Joker. This year he's probably going to be your nickel. And the year after that he's probably going to be your boundary safety. He is playing all over the field. I wouldn't be surprised if he could play cornerback at a certain time. Anthony Cook is the same way. They used him sometimes as your nickel last year in dime. Yeah, Kansas versus Kansas.
I don't think he was the nickel. I think that was a very specialty thing for him to chase Puka from a linebacker position. But it was still him playing linebacker, but I don't think it was. I think that was special third down, follow Puka Williams everywhere with a corner.
But that's still, you're still playing
right,
across
exactly,
the middle
yeah.
against the slot, not your regular position. That's versatile.
Right.
That's
yeah.
versatility that you're looking for at the next level. So what I think is happening is, Brandon Jones, yes, I think he's good, but I don't think he's going to get past the second round. I think that's his ceiling. But I still think that Brandon Jones, coming back next year, he's going to be legit. He's probably going to make the next step. You have Caden Stearns coming back. You have a lot of talent around the cornerback position. You have good talent in the nickelback position with Deshaun Jameson, Chris Thompson probably backing up B.J. Foster. And then throw, as long as you can figure out where to put DeMarvian Overshown, if he can succeed as a joker, then this secondary is going to be absolutely insane.
Right.
I think that there's a possibility DBU comes back this year. And I think it's a good possibility. If not this year, the next, for sure. So on that note, Joe, who are the breakout players for the football team this upcoming season? This question asked by, who was it? Asked by Chris Bennett on Twitter, a guy who listens to basically everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's possible to be a breakout player after you've been a two-time all-conference guy, so I'm gonna go ahead and make sure that Parker Braun isn't involved here. I think it's kind of hard to be a breakout player, at least in this scenario, when you're an incumbent starter like Sam Cosmi or Zach Shackelford. And then you have to look, you know, where are the new guys coming in? A little bit at running back, a little bit at only one receiver and tight end, and then on the right side of the line. So of those options, I really have to think that the best option for a breakout player is going to be Joshua Moore. I think we saw him really starting to show signs of success, signs of progress in scoring touchdowns at the beginning of last year before he went down with a shoulder problem. He was first string slot this spring. I know we're waiting on guys, or I know Texas is probably waiting on guys like Jake Smith. You know, Brew McCoy could give it a shot there. Jordan Whittington could be a hybrid player, although they don't want to use him too much at wide receiver now. They want him to learn running back. But Josh Moore's been here, and I think he understands how that position works. He has a quickness about him that not very many other players have. And I think that he's going to be able to – he's not going to be a little Jordan Humphrey, but he's going to be able to get open from the slot with both speed and quickness and be able to do, I think, at the very minimum, what Reggie Hemphill did in his really lone year. And that wasn't statistically impressive. It was just when he got an opportunity. If he's going to be able to do that –
just impressive in general. I thought he was really good.
If he's going to be able to do similar to that all season, he's going to put up a pretty good statistical year.
Yeah, I would say I'm going to break this down into two sides. I will say offense, I kind of talked about it beforehand. I think Devin Duvernay is your breakout player this year because Colin Johnson is not breaking out. You know, Zach Shackelford's known. Guys who are kind of known but not really, Devin Duvernay's your guy. I think that as long as Sam Ehlinger can find him, then he's going to break out. And he's honestly, he might have more, I don't want to say more, but This is an iffy. This might be a hot take here. But he might have more NFL, what scouts are looking for in the NFL than what Colin Johnson has. Because things are going less away. I mean, unless you are like Julio Jones.
Well.
Unless you're like Julio Jones, then they want more speed. They want more speed out there.
Right.
And that's what Devin Duvernay has.
Yeah, I think if you average the best parts of both of them and put them together, you'd get the NFL what the NFL wants.
You get a first rounder.
But instead, you have Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a hot take. What's up?
I forgot to add my defensive player. I think it's a no-brainer, DeMarvion Overshown. As long as he's on the field, he's going to wreck people. He was wrecking people on special teams last year.
You're wrong. The breakout defender is going to be Joseph Osai.
It's also a good one.
DeMarvion Overshown is not going to be on the field enough to be a truly breakout player. Joseph Osai is going to be on there every single play. And he is really, really good. And he only played a few number of snaps last year. You're wrong. I'm going to hold you to that. But let's go. The next question, kind of on the same line, asked by, who was it? Ben Blacklock, at Big Ben Blacklock on Twitter. He asks, outside of Sam Ehlinger, which player taking the next step in his development is most important to the offense taking off next season? Who do you think?
I think it's got to be two players. I think realistically, it's got to be the right side of the line. I think you're confident that what Denzel Okafor, what Derek Kerstetter, and even, you know, what guys like Christian Jones could give you, you know, you feel good about it. You just don't know about it. So you really need those guys to step up. Christian Jones received a lot of praise this spring, both behind the scenes and from the coaches, because of what he had done. Derek Kerstetter, I believe, you know, you have a solid floor player there. Same with Denzel Okafor, not as high of a floor as Kerstetter, nor as high of a ceiling, but he could still be a solid player. Those guys, whoever the two that combination's going to be, those guys have to really step up, because I think you can feel really confident about your left three with Cosme, probably Braun, and then Shackelford. I guess if you wanted to even throw Junior Angulau over on the right side discussion, you need two of those guys. You need your right guard
to work out.
You need your right tackle. You need them to be fine. You need them to be serviceable. You need them to be at least what Cosme was last year, which was great. Got beat at times, sometimes with power, but you need them to be about the same so you can open up the run game with all these new toys you have.
Right. I think on this kind of the similar line from you, I think you need Zach Shackelford to take the next step because everybody is assuming he has taken the next step. But last year was still a little shaky. He needs to take the next step in his progression if he wants to be, one, drafted, two, back to what he was his freshman year, and three, if Texas's offense wants to take off. Because I kind of believe football starts from the ball out. And who touches the ball every single play? The center and the quarterback. So the center is your centerpiece of your offensive line. If he is working correctly, if he is understanding, he is kind of the glue between the right and the left side. If he is good, then your offensive line in turn is good. You saw that last year with Oklahoma, with their center being an absolute boss and then taking, allowing guys who probably apart aren't as good together and in really being the glue there. Zach Shackelford needs to be that. So I think he's the guy who needs to take the next step. And I know everybody's expecting us to say, oh, probably Keyonte Ingram or Jordan Whittington because you need a run game. No, the run game, the running backs come after the offensive line. Again, taking a look at your rivals up north, they're able to have running back after running back after running back come in and look like world beaters because of their offensive line. And how dominant they are at the offensive line. Bill Bedenbaugh is absolutely killing it up there. So yeah. You need to have a guy up the middle if you want to be able to do that. That's Zach Shackelford.
Mm-hmm.
So the next question we have is from us. Joe, you get to choose one. Ready? This is a recruiting question. You either get Kelee Ringo, a five-star cornerback out of Arizona, or you get the big three defensive line in Texas and Vernon Broughton, Princely Umanmielen, or Alfred Collins. Which do you choose?
If I'm building a team, obviously...
Or Zach Evans. I'm going to add or Zach Evans.
See, that was what I was about to say. I was going to say I would take the three defensive linemen over Ringo, but I would take Evans over the three defensive linemen. Not because I don't think the defensive linemen are good, but Evans is really good. Texas has shown that it has an ability to really, with kind of whatever it gets, put together a pretty serviceable defensive line. You didn't say that they wouldn't at least get a couple of those three, and I think that's still a trade-off I would make.
No, you either get one or the other. You don't get any of those guys, and you get Kelee Ringo.
I would take the three over Ringo. I would take Evans over the three.
Okay. I could.
And I think Ringo's ceiling, I think, is higher than Evans.
Ringo
because,
is dominant. He is dominant.
There are a few athletes that look like Kelee Ringo on this planet, at least in high school. And
one of those is Zach Evans.
I still would take the three of them over Ringo. Not only because I think your Texas still recruits corner pretty well, and they're in on some good guys. Who they're not Kelee Ringo, but they're still solid game people you can win with. People that are going to be better than other receivers. But I feel like if you take Zach Evans over the three, that means you have Zach Evans. You're probably going to then get Damian George as well. And although you will have missed three guys who have perfect fits along the line, Texas has shown that they, like I said, they can make something out of nothing with defensive linemen. They can get, you know, without the highest rated guys, can do well. You would obviously prefer to have all the high rated guys to make them better because they're high rated for a reason. They're good. But Texas has shown that on defense they can get by and play pretty good defense without superstars on the defensive linemen.
Okay.
And if that's going to be a problem, then you might as well have a running back to go with your pretty good wide receiver core. That's a weapon to, you know, keep the pace of the score you may be giving up without those three linemen.
Let me go ahead and sweeten this Kelee Ringo deal. And I'm trying not to sweeten it way too much. So let me... Okay, Kelee Ringo and Dwight McLaughlin versus the big three.
Or the three. That's tough because those are both really good corners. If you have those really good corners, then the perimeter passing game is somewhat limited, meaning the team is still, the opponent is going to be like, well, we have to go through the middle. Who's in the middle? Not those three. Still taking those three over the two corners.
Okay. And I would agree there too. I think Texas is in more need of getting good defensive linemen than they are right now in need of getting good cornerbacks, because I believe the state continuously gives out a bunch of cornerbacks. This is the first year where Texas has a legitimate shot at three of the best defensive linemen in the state. Next year, there's always one guy in the state that is really good. Last year it was DeMarvin Leal. The year before that was Keandre Coburn, and I guess Ojimo kind of came out late. This year is Vernon Broughton. And then you have two guys following him up in Princely Mamielin, who's probably going to spin down to 4-eye or even nose tackle at some point. He's Taquan Graham 2.0. And then Alfred Collins, who is, I don't want to say Charles Omenihu 2.0, but kind
of. Yeah, there's a lot of refinement that needs to go on for Broughton. And
that's position what I mean
learning.
By that,
yeah. He's playing defensive tackle right now for his high school team.
Yeah. So that's Collins. I agree with you. I still think you go with the defensive line, but I guess I would give him up for Zach Evans. Dude, that kid is just,
yeah,
he's something else.
That's definitely chasing this shiny object, but then you got the shiny object, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like shiny things.
Yeah.
So the next question we have comes from, let's see, Mundo de Oviedo. God damn, I can never say this.
Oviedo. I forgot what that
Ovoido
actually means. It probably says it.
Ovoide. No, it's book. Mundo de Ovoide.
Oh.
Ovoide.
Well, I'm not reading.
I don't know. Voide. Mundo del Ovoide. Mundo del Ovoide. God damn. How do you say that?
Mundo.
Google.
Mundo de Ovoide.
Google Translate.
You mispronouncing.
Help me
it's
here.
Messing up me.
I should know this. I mispronounce everything. That's not. Ovoide.
Mundo del Ovoide.
Del Ovoide. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Google Translate.
AP Spanish was a long time ago.
Mundo del Ovoide. What does that even mean? World of the Ovoid.
I think it's like, it's an American college football in Mexico blog.
Really?
So you got to ask that again. Ask that again.
One more time for me. You're like, Mundo del Ovoide. Okay. The next question comes to us on Twitter from Mundo del Ovoide. They ask, currently, who is Texas's biggest recruiting rival, Oklahoma or A&M? Joe, who do you think?
I think you have to give the edge just a little bit to OU, just because you play the players that they get. And if you're in on a common target, and that common target goes to OU, you reap you reap what you sow. You didn't get them, and so now you have to play against them because you didn't recruit better than OU did in that recruitment. With A&M, I honestly believe that at least in the state of Texas, the image matters a lot. But since you're not playing A&M anytime soon, most likely, it doesn't matter as much as for OU. So I give this slight edge to OU, but obviously A&M is still a huge recruiting rival as well, just because they are your closest and biggest competition for the talent pool, for a common talent pool.
Yeah, I guess this is a very difficult question. This is a very good question, because there's a lot of ways you can go with it, because different targets are being targeted by Texas and Oklahoma, or Texas and Texas A&M. Like Troy O'Meara is being targeted by Texas and Texas A&M, whereas a guy like, let's say, Princely Mamielin is Texas and Oklahoma. Alfred Collin, Texas and A&M are the two teams that are taking a crack at them. A guy like Vernon Broughton is Texas and A&M. You're taking a look at Zach Evans, which is more, you know, maybe even all three, but really Texas and Texas A&M, and also Alabama. It's weird. It's very weird. And it's just, who do you like more in this cycle for, if you want to make it, who's your rival? And I guess I had to make it like that, I would say Oklahoma, because they have Texas fighting for more targets with them that I truly think are good players than I do with A&M in Texas. So right. That is the one that I think is probably your biggest rival between these two guys. And it probably will be smart for me to put together a list of who's going after who. And I think I actually did, but I lost it somewhere. I'll get it up for us. I'll get it up for us next show. We'll figure out who's going after who. But for now, I think Oklahoma is probably your biggest rival. So the next question we have, Joe, is your favorite one.
Oh, boy.
From Chris Bennett. What happened to the Texas baseball team? What are we on now? What's the losing streak at?
Well, it could have been broken this past Tuesday, but it wasn't because the weather didn't want anything to interfere with it. And then they are off this weekend for finals. So the losing streak's currently at 4. They are 19-9 at home and 6-16 on the road, 6-14 in conference, 500 overall, a truly dismal season for Texas baseball. I think it's because the reason they collapsed is obviously for any team, any sport, you want to your trend line to be up, as the season goes on. Last year, Texas's trend line up was extremely steep. Remember, they went 10-10 and then, or 9-9 and then ended up in Omaha. This year, the trend line for almost every category has trended down. And I think Trey Elling on 104.9 mentioned this. Nobody really improved their hitting once conference play started. I think only Lance Ford and Eric Kennedy had similar numbers, hitting numbers to when Lance Ford and Eric Kennedy, I think, were the only guys who made substantial improvements to their hitting during conference play. So you have a collection of guys just not hitting. There's no transcendent player like last year, but there's nobody who's just consistent. And when you don't have that, you can't, there's nobody to rely on to start things going or to bring in the runs. There's no starter. There's no starter for this offense.
And the guy who was going to be that tore his ACL or MCL riding a scooter.
Right. Yeah, no, he messed up. David Hamilton messed up his Achilles, but
Achilles, I think that's what it was.
I think you can definitely look at David Hamilton and DJ Petrinsky's season ending injuries and point. Yeah, definitely a loss or two, or a problem or two to, you know, not having those guys. Michael McCann is a great teammate. He's always been a Longhorn and he gives his best effort out there. He's a significant downgrade from DJ Petrinsky, and he's had to play almost the whole season. And when you play a significant downgrade, that's going to come back to bite you. But at the same time, you shouldn't have some of these players like Austin Todd, like Zach Zuby, like Duke Ellis, these guys who, like Ryan Reynolds, these guys with experience, just not improve, not really show much progress throughout the course of the year. To flip it to the pitch side, to the pitching side, the common refrain is they're going to be young, and they are very young. I think really only Bokey and Tristan and Henley, maybe either Tristan Stevens or Poison Ivy. I can't remember, but you don't have more than a handful of players who have been on campus for 3 years. A large majority of your pitching staff is young, is freshmen or sophomores, and they don't pitch confidently. They may have had, you know, there weren't very many, if I remember right. And let me just look at the schedule real quick. There's not a lot of, like, you know, low scoring pitchers duels. You got Purdue, you've got, you know, the first game at Stanford, and then the third game at Stanford, but there's, and then the Tech series, but it all bottomed out after that. You don't have a ton of low scoring pitching duels, save for games that Bryce Elder started. And I think a lot of that has to do with just there's not a bunch of reliable arms back there who you know are going to come in and 90% of the time get three outs. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with mental confidence. And I think a lot of that has to do with physically, you know, not throwing enough strikes. And then the two are so intertwined, but, you know, just the incredible amount of walks and rallies started by Texas for the other team. You know, you get into a point where you got two runners on base, you can't afford to put another guy on base with walks. So you throw a pitch and, yep, yeah, there's a two-run double. So it really just kind of all snowballed. And then once it starts snowballing, it's hard to stop. And confidence was affected. That's why you saw David Pierce try to mix things up, be the third base coach, mix up the lineup, even mix up the rotation a little bit. And none of it worked. Like, all these attempts to try to find something to get him out of this skid just were not successful. And so the problems quickly snowballed. I think I mentioned this at the beginning of the year. In fact, I'm almost certain of it, that the team's ceiling most likely was the super regional. I didn't think there was any chance that Texas was... I didn't think it likely that Texas was going to make a super regional, but if they did, they weren't getting past it. And I thought for sure they were going to be a team that was good enough to host. And I think all signs pointed to that after at least the LSU series, when you're sweeping the number one team. So for them to just bottom out, it raises a lot of questions about what this team's going to be like next year. And I think the overarching question to the program becomes, which seasons were the flukes? Was 2018 the fluke and kind of 2017? Or was 2019 the fluke? And that's a huge question going into 2020. David Pierce's seat is not hot right now. He's not going to get fired this offseason. I highly doubt he's going to make any staff changes. It is ridiculous to even bring up this topic. I just felt like it had to be addressed because somebody's going to ask, what the... I'm sorry, that was mean. but it definitely raises a little bit of concern about, you know, which season is the real season we should expect from David Pierce. I think it should be a little bit better when you got that all freshmen and sophomore staff is going to become a mostly sophomore and junior staff. You have to hope they get a lot better in another year, in another fall, and another, and playing in all the summer leagues that they're able to do. But they've got to prove it. And they're very likely not going to have an opportunity to prove it at all this postseason, because they're probably not making the Big 12 tournament without a bunch of help. Don't make that tournament. You're not making any sort of tournament. You can't win that tournament to get yourself into the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, this is a baseball program that I think has fewer than 10 under 500 seasons. This is the bastion of excellence in college baseball, and it's not that this year. It struggled to be that this decade. That's a lot of the reason why David Pierce is the head coach right now. But that struggle for excellence returned this year at the end of the decade. And, you know, to put a bow on it, it's going to be David Pierce's job to make sure that, you know, this is the season that reveals itself to be the fluke.
Right. And, you know, I think, again, the pointing to not having guys on the field who can be consistent, like David Hamilton, DJ Pruszynski, and a really, really young staff of arms in your bullpen, are the reason for this downslide. That has to be reason number one. So, again, not having guys who can keep you in a game after you have a lead has been Texas's Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you got to hope that it changes next year. But I think that's going to be it for us, y'all. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER on Twitter, or at texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. And Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89, and you can find all my stuff on InsideTexas.com.
You guys can find us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, and anywhere else you can find a podcast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.